interrupting the current neocolonial climate challenged, behaviorally controlled, energy starved, postulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting Episode BTWRLM 493. The Real Liberty Media, mightier than the pen, RLM Radio writing is on the air. Thanks to all your donations last year, as I think about it, helping keep this going. As we're trying to make a transition, a little bit difficult, but I think Vince is doing a great job moving it along. Hopefully there's a lot more great things to come. Remember, this is the most jam-packed minute in radio for a continuous 2 hours. Break free. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport, so get you behind the woodshed. That means you take responsibility. First, before you do that, you have to understand what we're up against and how the deceptions work. I notice, as I see, people don't understand a pretty prevailing one. They don't really understand what they're seeing. It's been in their face, and it's been part of their lives for a long time. I'll talk about the law and such, and all that was, there's laws that implemented this thing that we're suffering, that's being covered over by other entertainment. And I'm going to try and go through this was last week's notice to show you how that kind of works, and maybe how we're supposed to go about fixing that. Again, it's local. It all becomes local. I want to return to last week and this situation. It's serious, and it's part of the plan, and it's part of what's going on in the economic sphere. It's also part of a geopolitical control against, the geopolitical control of nations against each other. The story regarding the Nord Stream sabotage, and I want to point out something. It's interesting, if you look through the story and look who the proponents of certain things are, you'll see who the players are and what it appears they're covering. But what I want to do is move from there to show you that maybe we're looking at a new cover, this Ukraine so-called nuclear threat. And it is a threat because they all have the nuclear weapons, but an actual threat, I'm not so sure. But it's running cover for something else, and I want to point that out. Let me return to last week where we were talking about the Nord Stream sabotage, and interestingly, Bloomberg hosts panic after Columbia prof speculates that Nord Stream sabotage was a U.S. operation. I suppose that could be an U.S. operation. The Columbia University professor Jeffrey Sachs shocked Bloomberg News hosts on Monday by speculating that the destruction of the Nord Stream pipelines was a U.S. operation or joint U.S.-Poland action. You heard me discuss the evidence that was out there that I was saying the same thing. So we look at this and say, well, here's a professor from a university concurring with what you heard behind the woodshed. But I want to point out something here, and a couple things you should have seen. Bloomberg was advertising this. They were purportedly shocked at what this guy says, but he's from Columbia University. And anybody who's put a string of information together and understands where the players are, that's one of the places you want to keep an ear to relative to what's going on actually. What was said there, even though we think it's pointing to the U.S., and again, the evidence is clearly focused on the United States capacity or NATO, as I was talking to you, and more information comes out, and thank you to a couple of people sending me the information about the Monkey Works. I won't say that he definitively identified it. He points out to another evidence, one more, that links the United States actions to a Poseidon overflight that night. It was an anti-submarine aircraft. And so thank you to that, because that's just one more proof that the United States was more heavily involved here than what they're letting on. There's lots of other evidences to suggest that this was a NATO operation. If not, and the United States is part of NATO. NATO doesn't do much without United States concurrence. However, this is an interesting thing because I've been telling you, be careful on what they prop up as entertainment, and maybe you can identify it as entertainment, as opposed to what they're really driving on. So I want to get, because I saw this guy come up in Columbia University, they're like Berkeley. I mean, these guys are all in this. But he comes up and says, through the interview, the destruction of the Nord Stream pipeline, which I bet is United States of Poland action, because first of all, there is a direct radar evidence used United States military helicopters that are normally based in Gdansk were circling over the area. Remember, this is all over time. This is for months and months. The CIA was giving advanced knowledge to Germany that this was going to be happening, or likely to happen. And then in an apparent exposure of honesty relative to the narrative, Sachs continued, "I know this runs counter to our narrative. You are not allowed to say these things in the West, but the fact of the matter is, all over the world, when I talk with people, they think the U.S. did it. Even reporters are on paper to tell me privately." I'm going to point out this word narrative becomes very important, because if you go to where I'm going to go with this, and we're going there really quickly, as to who this guy actually is and what he's done in his life, you're going to hear this word narrative popping up in the latest fiasco that is implemented through the implementation of the medical fraud, and you're going to see the same players and the same agenda moving. And there's some information coming out to give our heads up to be careful of what's happening, that they're not moving on this. They're moving on something else. We hear now, more to the point, when you understand the underlying point about all this and the agenda he's talking about, the narrative he's talking about, what that supports. We hear this guy, Jeffrey Sachs, is an economist. Speculated, he's not a military guy, he's an economist, speculated on Monday that the sabotage of the Nord Stream pipelines was the work of the United States and Poland. So they go on and tell it, but here's what's interesting. He's now a professor at Columbia University. Sachs became notorious in Russia for masterminding the, quote, shock therapy reforms in the 90s, but has been sharply critical of the West's approach to the conflict in Ukraine in recent months. I'm going to put critical in quotes as well. It's not there in the article. We go down to the bottom of the article and it says, currently the director of the Center for Sustainable Development at New York's Columbia University, Sachs gained notoriety among Russians for his shock therapy reforms in 1991 and 1993. The overhaul of the entire Soviet economy ended up by destroying the lives of millions of Russians and handing the country's wealth over to a handful of oligarchs. Putin ended the whole looting operation after coming to power. That's part of the reason our globalist elites hate him with such a passion. Obviously, this is the interjection of the editor. But listen to what he's tied to. He's tied to Columbia with sustainable development. As I've suggested, Berkeley is another hub on the West Coast. He's not talking. He's talking as an economist now relative to what this whole process is doing to destroy you, essentially. He's not actually talking about a pipeline threat. It is that it's going to get rid of the Russian supply of carbon, if you will, but that's not what he's talking about there, and that's not what he's involved in, and he's been involved in integrated historically with Russia. Putin ended all that stuff, that's what's kind of got a burr under the saddle of the globalists, if you will. Earlier this year, Sachs also speculated that COVID came out of a U.S. biotech lab. And I want to say, when you read this story and you look at this, this is another diversion. Remember, he's a mastermind of shock therapy. Ron Unz has pushed that theory from the very beginning. It sounds quite plausible as the first targets were China after the failure of the U.S.-backed Hong Kong protests and Iran after the failure of the U.S.-backed color revolution. The glaring problem I see with the theory is that the U.S. didn't close its borders as the virus was spreading and instead flew people in from Wuhan. It doesn't make sense that they would leave our border wide open and fly people in from an epicenter of an outbreak knowing it was a bioweapon. He understands it was a bioweapon, but it's not a weapon in the conventional sense. Remember, there is no the virus. This was a genetic string of code in a computer. So he's acknowledging something that's a bioweapon. He doesn't say exactly what. If we talk about what the implement of destruction was, it was a chemical weapon that was then later dispensed in the population. If you're looking at this as a bioweapon attack, you're missing the point, because that was a tool to get to destroy the economies. He's the economist, remember, in order to bring the economy susceptible to the new transformation. the last bit of the article says, that said, only a few parties stand to gain from the destruction of the Nord Stream pipelines, America, Ukraine, Poland, and Israel. That's right. I said cui bono last week in the last reading that who would be best to answer. And you're going to see, if we go through this information, we have to find out that Copenhagen, who has sensors in the ground, in the water there, absolutely had to know and be participant in the attack on an infrastructure that was inactive. And that becomes interesting as we move on about how the narrative of United States expertise in destroying Russia, and it moves on here to keep our attention on the merits of the United States, even though they're denying that they do anything. As we look here, another concurrence, former Pentagon advisor says U.S. likely attacked Nord Stream pipelines to isolate Germany. You don't need to be an expert at Pentagon to see how this is working out. The point is purportedly a former Pentagon advisor. So we got to understand these narratives are there. They're running a narrative right now. They're changing a narrative right now relative to the police power they've wielded across the world. And understand the scope of this. A former Pentagon advisor says the most likely culprits behind the Nord Stream pipeline blast are the United States and Britain, and that the attack was carried out to prevent Germany from bailing on the war in Ukraine. Well, it's going to do a whole lot worse. It's attributed to retired U.S. Army Colonel Douglas MacGregor, who made the comments during an appearance on the Judging Freedom podcast. I don't want to... Who knows about this guy? He says he's retired. Maybe he's a whistleblower of sorts. But, you know, when they're starting to attack this thing this way, and you hear that this guy who's the head of sustainable development is saying the same thing, you just have to start wondering, what's the real diversion going on, and what is it diverting? They're doing some real things out there. That's not the whole point. That's part of the point. And so there's a lot of pieces being moved about. And I'm suggesting these are all working as entertainment covers to keep us a little bit off the point as well. So there's a concurrence going on that the United States was involved. I'm not even going to prove it. I'm going to say the evidence is clear. Who benefits? Certainly NATO would benefit. Certainly the partners of NATO just attacked another partner. I find that silence amazing. But keep moving. It's not really where I'm moving to. I'm trying to show that there is a very well-constructed narrative that people buy into. We all did. If we didn't know to look for it before. But that was what we were led to believe, and in our lives, we just kept moving along. We were told, and this came out right at the same time, this story, just to let you know, Reagan approved to sabotage Soviet gas pipeline in 1982. There's quite a bit of few people carrying this story, and caused me to start thinking. You start reading inside the story, you see anomalies. And so that started to lead me to believe this. Though it is possible, and don't underestimate, I've told you this, and we're going to get to someone else who sees the same thing. Putin is telling you the truth, that they'll defend themselves with nuclear weapons. But what you're going to consistently hear omitted, the silence in the United States keeps saying that, pointing out, and people, NATO keep pointing out he said that, and Zyolinsky saying that Putin pointed out, they tend to forget to tell you and disclose they were the ones that instigated the initial threat that he was saying that if you do that, we're going to respond. And nothing is left off the table. I want you to remember that, because this is part and parcel to how this little game seems to work. Getting back, the government now comes out to propagandize, and people picked it up, that Reagan approved a plan to sabotage. There's the point. I don't know that they didn't, except that current study now shows, in fact, that story may not be so true. And maybe now we're looking again at how the story and the narrative promoted to that gets us off the point. The below article that's written in this article is from 1994. I think some of these numbers may be off as well, but anyway, we just read for what it said. They obviously speak to the lengths that certain elements in Washington during the Cold War and now would be willing to go to in order to achieve its political and economic ends in Russia. So I want to point out this term political and economic, because there's another author that came forward to explain through an old, through a wartime philosophical general, I think he was, how this works. War is an extension of politics. And the threat of war is an extension of political policy. They also talk economically here. That's what we're currently being destroyed by. We don't really see that. It's very interesting they bring this up in the story, that they want to attribute how great the CIA was, how great Reagan was, in order to set up a plan to pull Russia in, to sabotage its situation then. And then I can't go through all the anomalies I was finding that caused me to look closer. And in fact, that may not have been what happened. That's what they wanted us to lead to happen. And we'll see some evidence of, well, nobody even responded. Anybody of any official character never responded to it. In January 1982, President Ronald Reagan approved the CIA plan to sabotage the economy of the Soviet Union through covert transfers of technology that contained hidden malfunctions, including software that triggered a huge explosion in the Siberian natural gas pipeline, according to a memoir of the Reagan White House official, Thomas C. Reed, a former Air Force secretary who was serving in the National Security Council at the time, describes the episode in a book named At the Abyss, and an insider's history of the Cold War. Reed writes that the pipeline explosion was just one example of cold-eyed economic warfare against the Soviet Union that the CIA carried out under the director of William J. Casey during the final years of COVID war. I got to interject on here that he then, the stories will tell you that he got permission from the National Security Council to provide this information. And that was a little bit of a red flag. Would be fomenting more war today. In other words, that's what they probably want. But Russia, I don't think, Russia, as I said, told you, is a chess player. Be careful in what you think you see out there that Russia's doing. They are moving their plan to protect themselves politically and economically, notwithstanding all the contrary noise. They're now explaining how they figured out upon a Soviet inquiry for more technology that they allowed the CIA allowed flawed software to the Soviets in a way they could not detect it. And again, these people—they're being told the Russians are stupid, and that they don't have, you know, like their intelligence services are not all over this. But this will come out a little bit later, proving the point of it, I guess, with an alternative view. They go to explain how this was so systematically done. And they make a comment here that's in bold. The result of these disruption of the gas supply through to the pipeline software was to run the pumps, turbines, and valves was programmed to go haywire after a decent interval, to reset the pump speeds and valve settings to produce pressure far beyond those acceptable to pipeline joints and welds. Reads, writes. I want you to consider now. You have to always put yourself in that position, that day, that time, and that era, and figure out whether or not that could even be possibly true. And again, this is just the notice here is a promotion, it seems to me. And I want you to put your mind back at that time. Were they using all that stuff that the software could be used? And I want you to think. We've heard. I've reported it here. What did we hear recently? Since I think 2010 or 11, what happened at the very same thing? Supposedly a worm. We'll get to the name. Maybe you can put that in your list in your mind as we're thinking. What worm was out there that sounded like it did the very same thing? In 2010, though. Not back when. In 1982. So, move on here. The result of this manipulation was Reed claims, is the most monumental non-nuclear explosion and fire ever seen from space. Satellites picked up the explosion. Reed said in an interview that the blast occurred in the summer of 1982. So I went looking for the pictures and I didn't find any. You might. I couldn't find it. I don't have a lot of time and I don't have a lot of bandwidth to be doing it, so I'm a little bit hobbled in my investigation now and or the time I can devote to any of this or the broadcast. So I'm trying to keep this thing as normal as possible underneath the stressors, but I went looking. I couldn't find it. Why, they go on to say, quote, while there was no physical casualties from the pipeline explosion, there was significant damage to the Soviet economy. No physical casualties on an explosion that was the largest non-nuclear explosion that looked like a nuclear explosion in all of history almost? Yeah, more anomalies. This story just seemed to be now baking. Is this baking this story in? And I'm wondering, this one's not making sense anymore. It stopped making sense to go look deeper. They then attribute this intelligent motion, this covert motion by the CIA and the United States and Reagan, attribute to Reagan, and the government, the United States government is taking down Russia. And again, the book goes on and on and on. I know, again, the reading of this is quite extensive. I got a lot to cover here to get to the point that did that really happen? And the promotion continues that Reagan approved a plan to sabotage the Soviets. This was out of the Washington Post. This was written a lot earlier. I'm trying to go back a bit as the reports were there. So we know that there's a historic response, that they kept telling this tale, that in January 1982, the President Reagan approved a CIA plan to sabotage the economy of the Soviet Union through covert transfers of technology. And this becomes very critical here. In fact, if you look at these treaties, they involve open transfers of technology. What's interesting as well here, they're talking about sabotaging the Soviets' potential, when just years later, President Clinton gave, we were told, and it seemed like it, with the technology shift that China went through, gave super secret, super critical military equipment technology to the Chinese. In particular, one was the stealthy atomic submarines. So that was another thing out there. So right after this, they're handing China information. Again, understand that when I went back to sustainable development, that's to take away all national sovereignty and put it underneath governance, not government. Hold that together in your mind of that guy, economist, talking sacks that says, oh, the United States done it. I have to suspect that with all the evidence, circumstantial, didn't see it there as it is. I think the United States did do it. Cui bono. Yeah. NATO. They need to do this. In fact, we hear more things. The new pipeline is coming online. They're going to invest like $11 billion. They couldn't not do that before. No, they got to start the so-called war. Now they're going to put us on a nuclear footing. But here we have now another report, a different way to explain the same thing, that the CIA slipped bugs to the Soviets. Same story, over and over and over, retold a different way, explaining that this technology that was slipped to the Soviets interfered with their pipeline machines, and it caused this explosion. And remember, you're thinking about it today, so you've got to really kick yourself back, because there's a truth that comes out here in a Soviet expert's statement that it can't be denied. That this writings today, these stories that were coming, have been a plan for a long time as well. Moving on, another story, bursting the myth. Here we come. The CIA's involvement in the 1982 Trans-Siberian pipeline explosion. And understand, I don't know, remember all this too well. Little memories here and there. I don't really remember it all. I had to pick this up. What are we talking about? Well, finally, as I go through the stories here, I found out it was a Siberian. There's actually quite a few pipelines, and you have to find the specific one. That's difficult to do to get the right information as well, but we'll see how all this information is consistent and consistently telling the same story, which gives it seemingly credibility, but when you start applying the facts to the ground, they can't attach, actually. And here's this statement here, the busting the myths of the CIA involvement. I'm going to suggest busting the myths of possibly the Reagan involvement. Busting the myths that there was an involvement. They say that when you repeat an error too many times, it starts becoming a fact. And that is probably what happened in the Trans-Siberian pipeline explosion in June 1982, with an often repeated rumor that the CIA being allegedly responsible for the entire exercise. But busting this myth can only happen when one gets into the intricate details of what actually went down prior to the explosion that shook the Soviet natural gas supply to its core. Remember, this is a gas explosion that has the power that looked like a nuclear blast. And I don't know if you have a basic idea of what gas explosions do, and they can be quite fierce. They may not be able to come up with, unless it's a computer model that's being tested, they may not be able to come up with that sort of a response. In other words, like the Hindenburg, people lived because the helium gas burned up. It's lighter than air. When it came out, the energy went up. And it was a big ball of flame, and then it evaporated. It didn't explode either. Now, these high-pressure things can, but we're going to hear a little bit of someone who was on that side who didn't observe something, but observed other facts that show that you almost can't even get that sort of a blast. And so we start seeing more elements of potential failure on the story. That's the narrative that's been fed to us. Considered to be one of the major incidents of a cyber attack in the world at the time, around Halloween 1982, An explosion occurred in the middle of Siberia that ended up burning a large portion of the newly built Trans-Siberian pipeline. The sudden explosion severely damaged the pipeline, which was set to produce an approximated $8 billion worth of fuel revenue annually to the USSR. And don't underestimate where that fuel was always going to go, to people, to be used by people and industry in Europe, or they call the EU now, the European Union, the veneer. For example, it was believed that the CIA was responsible for this damaged explosion, with rumors doing the rounds with CIA officials that had planted a Trojan horse, a code name for doctored data being passed to the Soviet agent responsible for the espionage of various critical and classified defense data and technology. However, when the case was recently revisited by theorists and experts, the reality came to be that from what was perceived to be the truth, and it essentially is not, go through read and read, it essentially is not, cannot be constructed the way we were told or the way you will hear it told. And they go through how they work through that. It goes deep into this. All the players are there, but they're not actually fulfilling what we're told was done. And they again keep showing and referring to this technological transfer. And we put our mind into the current sabotaging that's going on in the infrastructure we've been told for the last, 8, 10 years now, and the plan that was going to happen, our own pipelines in the United States being sabotaged, the system, the digital system being able to be sabotaged, and our mind is primed to accept these ideas that CIA somehow put their plan together and hid bugs in the software that Russia were too stupid to find and put it in their system and caused problems. And that's the question. Think back. What system did they have? We assume they had the system today. And that's going to be a fatal error. And so we move on. And we go, and I brought to concur these stories together, went to Wikipedia. Wikipedia is involved as well to continue the cohesion of a narrative. And it refers to Reed. We go to the At the Abyss webpage, and it describes all this stuff again. It talks about the Trojan horse software that led to a huge explosion, according to Reed, who got clearance to talk about this stuff. I was kind of aghast a bit that they would be out actually admitting to this in the open. But somehow that just doesn't seem to be like the old the confidential stuff of how the government operatives work, that you expose that, unless it's not being done. No, it's being done, but not kind of like this. This is like, becomes, to my mind, a nice movie script that he's attempting to sell, but that's about it. But we have to prove a little bit of proof of that. We've got to find the information that's not coming from these government operatives. And you start looking around who's passing the same story around. And you have to start saying, well, who are these people passing this stuff around? We now have a challenge that this was even possible. Someone started to look at it. They don't name these experts at the beginning here, but okay, let's open our mind back up, stop being entertained, and let's look closely. Because it starts to tell us, hopefully we'll see, as I go move this thing through today, the people that work in the United States government are absolute deceivers. And I say that now, I can hear the voices. Yeah, we know that. The point is that, yes, they are. You have to stop buying into what they're talking, not just to dismiss it. Because to not buy in and not respond against it is our downfall. And that's what the underlying thing that's going on that Jeffrey Sachs is promoting is going to prevail. And that's the thing that's got me concerned. I don't see people seeing it. I can talk about all this stuff. We have people that also talked about it. I can give you the words and you think that you know the words. You don't know how it applies. You don't know how to take the words and apply it to show the very real threat in your life where you live today is so far beyond what you can conceive. It's kind of scary to me. Part of me says we're going to do all right, but it's not going to be because I'm not talking. It's not going to be because others are not talking. And then trying, as I try to do, different than most people I hear when I look around, show you where to go in order to protect yourself and at least, like I say, neutralize it until more come to put their shoulder to the problem. But here we have this non-nuclear explosion. Explosion as big as a fire ever seen from space. I couldn't find a picture. Maybe it's out there. Then how would we know for sure? If we start to understand, it's not really, when you look at the facts, it didn't really happen that way. And maybe It didn't happen at all. And it, as they do, they use other things to cover for it and just make the statement and we for us to buy it, buy into it. A report in the Moscow Times quoted KGB veteran Vasily Pichlintsev as saying that there was a natural gas pipeline explosion in 1982, but it was near Tobolsk on a pipeline connecting the Yurinovskoy gas field to the city of Chelyabinsk. And it was caused by poor construction rather than sabotage, according to Chelinsev's, excuse me, destroying this Russian account. No one was killed in the explosion and damage was repaired within one day. Reed's account was also not, has not been corroborated by intelligence agency in the United States. And I want to point that part out. So I read that. That's the silence you're going to hear. Why they, people will claim that their CIA did not make a claim for this. And it's because likely it didn't happen. And so there's another clue here. As you read through, you're going to see consistencies. Even at the Wikipedia, if you look through what they're talking about, put together some of these things that you're being told is getting the fact elements that can tell a different story. Another point of the criticism of the sabotage is written in this Wikipedia article, allegations is according to Zach Matov, an explosives safety expert who has overseen the safety measures of many of the Soviet oil and gas pipelines since 1980s at the described time frame. Soviet Union didn't practice digital control in its pipeline system. And so there is the key, one of the keys here. And so I want to move to his article. It's an article that was printed, an explosion that didn't happen. Another criticism to the Western narrative that CIA and Reagan were so profoundly intelligent that they moved this operation along to destroy the Russian economy. The point I'm saying is that there is a definite interest to destroy the Russian economy and politics. So let's take that for the face truth on why it's going to be relevant. All this stuff today is relevant, but it's not because the United States has been so adept at pulling this off. As we read from the gentleman that they just cited to in that article, the critic, and he brings up some interesting little points, one of which is that there was no such technology to which software could interfere with. They used analog devices, hand valves, safety releases that are automatic is the other thing. They have a hybrid system. If they did do digital, it would have had a hybrid safety system that's not digital. And so you wouldn't have had the type of buildup that they're talking about. He explains how all that is, and he explains it from as an authority. Very interesting thing that they're saying that he did. The multidimensional pulse protection technology. What the heck is that? But it's situated around the modern fire extinguishing equipment and protection and elimination and consequences of accidents and catastrophes. He's also known as an independent expert on explosions and firefighting who took part in extinguishing large fires in Ukraine, Russia, Poland, Israel, at such facilities as military arsenals, oil refineries, oil platforms, etc. He gives lectures in Russia and the United States of America, Israel, Switzerland, Estonia, the Czech Republic, and Poland. All the players, right? He's known to these folks, this guy, this expert. We don't hear from him, apparently. He is a well-known independent expert on emergency situations in Europe. There's a Russian guy, a member of the International Anti-Terrorist Committee, participant in the liquidation of the consequences of the Chernobyl nuclear power plant accident, of the first category. His statement is, in part, you can get this and read it, it's going to be a translation that I found of the original article, which you can get as well. In the period 1980 to 82, I worked annually for up to 250 days as a member of the team of the EO Patton Electric Welding Institute of the National Academy of Sciences of Ukraine on gas and oil pipelines from Ufa to Tumen. We worked out technology of explosive cutting of damaged and emergency sections of gas and oil pipelines, explosive welding of branches, and welding of new pipes in place of damaged ones. We took part in the elimination of all major accidents on gas and oil pipelines in these years, but I did not hear anything about this mythical grandiose explosion. Is there a Russian expert on this now? He's involved with it, into terrorism, back in 1982. This guy sounds connected to his technological expertise. He's going on to say that no mythical grandiose explosion. I do not dispute that there were many accidents, but not more than similar latitudes in America and Canada. Inukistan. These were accidents mainly due to violations of safety regulations and pipeline laying technology in difficult geologic conditions or of swamps. Let me interject. Remember all of United States pipelines and Vince Easley, and I had to say his name. It is not easily, but easily, and that he worked on pipeline. He said that's a real major problem, and this was part of the problem of what we were seeing in the gas pipelines that were leaking. The beds may not have been laid right, and they get punctures just by laying there. So he's saying this is just an overall condition from improper installation at some point, but there was no giant non-nuclear explosion that happened. I was responsible for the fire and explosion safety of explosive technology during pipeline repairs and implement a compact device that reliably prevent fires and explosions on gas pipelines. Judging from the quotes from the Thomas Reed's book, Over the Abyss, the history of the Cold War told by its participant, presented on the Internet, the Mandela Effect, folks, on the Internet, approved the CIA sabotage plan to transfer the USSR technology with a hidden defect, a computer program for automating the gas pipeline. Here I would like to emphasize that at the time, pipelines were mainly operated manually with minimal automation. Computerization of pipeline management appeared by the end of the 90s, and the dispatcher always remained in charge, checking all automatic signals before they were put into operation. I believe that this is the main confirmation that the explosion 82 of the gas pipeline in Siberia and is a common Cold War fiction. Further, for example, in the same Wikipedia article, for foreign authors indicated telling about the creation of a special KGB unit designed to steal technology abroad. Perhaps people describing this fact worked in high positions, but they did not understand the specifics of intelligence. Any intelligence service of any country, including the United States, has always been engaged in stealing new technologies. Well, that's just like President Clinton that gives it to the enemy, the Chinese. Okay, that's not in this article. I added that. Excuse me. Couldn't help myself. However, it goes on to say, in the USSR, the GUR of the USSR Defense Ministry worked much more successfully in this direction than the KGB, whose main task was counterintelligence inside the USSR. Everyone knows that the purpose of intelligence, especially during the Cold War, was to get information about what could enter service with a potential enemy in the near and distant future. In contrast, the USSR did not simply copy what existed in the West, but used its own technologies trying to get ahead and make it better and more powerful than what became known thanks to intelligence. Let me interject here. Now we're seeing, they say this before, there is no analog. That phrase is put in this article that we hear today, that right now the Russian government has created weapons with no analog in the West. There's no comparison to some of the devices they've designed. They could not have done that with technology from the U.S. They had to be using their own brain. So to think that these people are stupid and the CIA got over on them at the first point is kind of a blunder in our mind, to exalt the West mind at all. And he's pointing a little bit of that out. Governments steal technology. And sure, they'll hand it over if you want to take it, but do you think that they receive it without checking it? No, that's not going to happen so much. More importantly, all this digital technology was likely not applicable to much of anything that they had in 1982. And he's resting that. I looked at that. I said, he's the expert. He called it the same thing that violated my mind. In 82, we were just coming through wire wrapping. I mean, we're moving into the newer stuff we now see today. I was literally on a tech bench an R&D tech bench, wire wrapping circuits 8-9 feet long to work on chips that we're going to design that were no bigger, can't be bigger than your thumb, because we didn't have the technology to do them without lots of waste. And that was that device was a heart pacemaker that was programmable on the outside. At the time, they didn't even exist in 1980s. Now, so we're wire wrapping. That's right before the plug-in stuff. They're not running too many. These are when the computers were still the size of the room, the size of rooms and buildings. And so it was easier and more economical for them to just have valves that worked. Anyway, moving over back to this, as he writes, there were more stories about explosions similar to the mythical explosion of the gas pipeline in 1982 described in the 70s and 80s, but especially a lot of them appeared in the 90s when any legend in the post-Soviet countries began to be taken on faith under the brand of declassified information, which resulted in tons of dirt during perestroika and the first years of choosing of a new path of development for the countries of the former USSR, and understand that political change and what that has done, and now attribute it to the other story that Putin pretty well stopped this nonsense and tries to make order. And it'll also be written, and I think you'll see in a very interesting, insightful article, who Putin really is and what he really is and what influence he doesn't have and what he relies on in order to get things done is strictly the formation inside law. He's not just wielding a hatchet everywhere. He's not a tyrant that way. It's not his character either. I've never seen that either. That's just, again, the narratives of the West. Moving back to the article, this gentleman says, I would like to pay special attention to some of the amateurish comments of those who created the legend of the explosion. The code that allegedly changed the speed settings of the pumps and valves, which led to an increase in pressure in the gas pipeline to such indicators that the seams and joints of the gas pipeline could not withstand, this is the utterance of an absolute amateur. In a gas pipeline, the pressure can change for a number of reasons. So in the cases of a pressure surge, pressure relief valves have always existed along the entire length of the pipeline, operating independently of the head control system, especially the pump operation mode. It is also noted the power of the explosion was 3 kilotons. I dare say that there can't be a gas air explosion with a power of 3 kilotons, because volume explosions, including volume detonating weapons, are limited in power, especially in open space. The limitation is due to the fact that this type of explosion strongly depends on weather conditions, primarily of the wind. With large gas leaks, a complex system of buildings and structures of an oil refinery is needed to form explosive local clouds, as was the case in the Flixborough in England. By the way, he says, I am very familiar with the specifics of the tragedy that occurred several years later than the date of the mythical explosion in 1989 in the Western Siberian Ural-Volga gas pipeline in Bashkiria. There, a gas air cloud was formed due to the terrain, and the explosion was initiated by the passage of a train. People died from burns, and there was no sign of destruction like a 3-kiloton explosion. I could give a lot more of special calculations confirming the explosion of the Urengoy-Surgut-Chelyabinsk gas pipeline in 1982 simply could not have happened. But to prove it, you can do with even simpler facts of our time. The news often tells about the events when accidents occur on gas pipelines due to the insertion. This is actually the word tapping, and the actual due to the tapping of an unauthorized branches. There are many explosions and fires, but they are all low power, although, for example, in the Carpathians, the terrain is suitable for the formation of relatively large explosive gas air clouds. In the case of unauthorized tapping in the pipeline itself, specialized equipment is not used, the safety or work is not observed, and the pipeline automation is damaged. Therefore, thank God that such explosions are possible only theoretically on models, but in practice, they have not yet been implemented due to a large number of real hindering factors, as stated by their Russian expert. Excuse me for not remembering his name. Oh, Lakhmatov, I think, here, as I can see it. So, we start looking and putting the facts together, and certainly it doesn't seem like it's possible. Certainly, there would be nothing for the CIA to deny if it's a story, and certainly there was nothing reported. Certainly, the Soviets wouldn't even respond to that. And we find stories about that being stated. It says, to this day, Russian officials have never conceded that the 1982 explosion was a result of CIA interference. In the 1990s and 2000s, the relations between Russia and the U.S. still looked rosy. Engineers and ex-KGB agents came forward to tell media that industrial negligence or even shoddy workmanship and not sabotage was to blame. So if there was no explosion, CIA didn't do the interference, right? There's nothing there to do. The CIA never directly confirmed its involvement with the Urengoy-Surgut-Chelyabinsk pipeline explosion. However, in a page on the CIA's official website, the agency did boast that, quote, flawed turbines were installed in a gas pipeline, close quote, as part of the broader U.S. technological sabotage campaign against the USSR. So that brings up my mind about what they're doing, what Siemens is being told to do with that turbine, or why it's not being released over there in Germany, with the sanctions now not allowing Russia to run the pipelines while they went down in maintenance. Because it's always been a plan to shut down the economy and politics of Russia. And I guess they're playing us for fools when you find out maybe the narrative is just for us. They're not paying attention to that. They don't even make a comment to it. So the lack of a response doesn't prove anything either. And the lack of admission certainly can't prove anything. And yet there's no evidence any of that happened, though there was evidence of other things that the West was attributing to bolster their narrative, that this writing from their expert was done in 2011 after the book was written. I think that was in 2004. So this is a recent comment from 2011 showing there was no way this narrative since the 80s and 90s, as we're told, could even possibly be there. Moving on. Another narrative that you want to bolster the United States position, but I can see, the only thing I can see is that the United States want Russia dead, whether it's politically and or economically. And there's a thing that's interesting to me that Jeffrey Sachs, economist out of Columbia, is talking about, the head of sustainable development, that I've told you Putin is actually putting in place. There actually don't seem to be much different. They're just going at it. Well, the run's running the narrative without the cover of entertainment. And there's a real geopolitical battle going on, which you see Russia in the seat of decision, in the seat of control at this point. The United States is not going to make anything obvious. No, they come in covertly and destroy infrastructure, even if that means attacking the people of Europe, because they're against the people of Europe. But that's to do what? Implement the pressure to then put everybody underneath a low-carbon shared responsibility, servitude. Well, all this destruction needs money eventually. You're going to find these new pipelines are going to need money. Where are they going to get money in the world stage? They've got to go where? To the World Bank, the IMF, or the BIS. So what was he talking about before I said, what was this thing that it's in our present mind, I can't say modern, on our current mind, when we're just hearing about worms and utilizing digital controls, instructions that destroy at a certain time, destroy equipment, like we heard, this we give closer now, like we heard that happened to those Iranian uranium centrifuges, but Stuxnet. What was Stuxnet done? Well, Israel. What was the story that this guy from Russia was educating people around the world about the dangers and the terrorism and this and that? He went to Israel to describe what they were finding and how to stop it. The story goes with them that there was apparently some digital control system that could be secreted in software. I don't know that it was the CIA that did it. But Stuxnet come to mind when I started hearing what they were saying, but Stuxnet wouldn't have been applicable back then either. As we heard someone from their own pipeline expert field about how their system was. United States, USSR didn't actually put quite a bit of quality stuff in when they didn't have to, but they did have standards because it'll kill people in this field if you don't do it correctly. Even then they had standards where they had to lay the pipe right. That's just a physical fact. You don't want to put infrastructure in and have it blown up on you. Or leaking, like we had in the United States. How many times did that come up in the story behind the woodshed? So Stuxnet came to mind. You can study that. You can see the background of that. Look at the players. look at the strategic happening. Do you realize that when the Zionists went in and stole the gas from Lebanese and took that field, they become a local player relative to getting gas from there to Europe. So don't underestimate that as well. But this story that we're using software developed and secreted into Russia unawares to the Russians to manipulate equipment, pipeline equipment, looks like it couldn't even start to be relevant and applicable. It just wasn't there. They're not talking about it because it just didn't happen, but it was good entertainment for the West population to continue feeling like they're doing something good against the evil Russia. And we have some of this economic angle coming here in the next story. Putin, as we are told from this, Putin dealt blow as EU to replace Russia with $11 billion new gas pipeline. And they say, where are they going to get that money? How are they going to move that? What servitude or nation is going to have to get into to do that? And why wouldn't they have done that instead of starting Ukraine? They put the money over there. They've been putting more than this money, I think, if I was reading correctly, to Ukraine. Why didn't they just dump that before into a pipeline and not go to war, not use the narrative? And that's the point. They couldn't use the nuclear threat. They're going to get their pipeline anyway. And they destroyed the pipeline, or at least it seems like they've destroyed the pipeline. I did find out it's possible. I don't know how likely it is, but it's possible that I guess Russia could fix that pipeline, notwithstanding that seawater got into it. Whether they'll do that, I don't know. But they're claiming now the European Union leaders are reportedly looking to the end delays on the Trans-Saharan pipeline, which flows across the Great Desert from Nigeria. Sounds like an email scam to me. Into Spain and Italy. In late July, Algeria, Nigeria, and Niger signed a memorandum of understanding to build a natural gas pipeline across the Sahara Desert. First proposed in 2002, the pipeline never got off the ground but was finally revived as Russia's invasion of Ukraine forced Europe to look for alternative gas supplies. Well, that sounds like an excuse to me, folks. I don't know about you. While officials and experts have warned of financial hurdles offering further delays, the EU is reportedly looking to push the plans through to get the pipeline flowing as soon as possible. I guess I could read more. I've been looking through here. You can just watch. There's a strong political will. Here we go again. The word politics is involved for energy. And where are they going to get their money? They have a problem. Do they have a problem? Not with the IMF and not with the World Bank or the BIS looking to take down countries by loaning money to put these infrastructures in. The Trans-Saharan gas pipeline could send up to 30 billion cubic meters a year of supplies to Europe. However, experts warn that major financial issues need to be resolved in order to make headway with the pipeline. That's telling you where the bottom line is going to be. And when they do that, when you look at the documentation I've read behind the woodshed, you're going to see this becomes that shared wealth, shared debt, shared obligation, debt to sustainability stuff that the World Bank, the IMF, the BIS is all completely involved in that I've been talking about. Where does that connect to that connects directly to the economist coming out of Columbia that's the head of sustainable development? So they keep talking about this thing. They revived it. They used it as an excuse. I don't know how those three countries are actually in any control position. I think Africa, one of the other complaints is that the United States has got Africa pretty well controlled, even though they ham-handedly do everything. But they're getting tired of that. Africa's getting tired of that, too. Moving over, though, another insightful writer, knowing a little bit of the geopolitical stage, Pepe Escobar, looking at Nord Stream sabotage propels disaster capitalism to new toxic level. Again, this is capitalism in the context of economy. It's again about an economic destruction and a rebuilding, a transformation that's going on in the world. The sabotage of Nord Stream and Nord Stream 2 pipelines in the Baltic Sea has ominously propelled disaster capitalism to a whole new toxic level. Let's step back a little bit. So any disaster becomes the way you get money, you make money, you get people money to move. Look what they just did to reinvigorate the Trans-Saharan pipeline. Look at what that does to position Israel now for its gas supplies. The theft of the Lebanese and possibly Palestinian peoples. Their mineral. And I've talked about all this theft that goes on. So again, if they do it there, they're going to do it to us as a mineral estate grantee, as a miner. We see a direct attack from the United States government against its own people. Well, I think I'm really kind of specially placed to see this stuff. It's really kind of a unique view for me. This episode of the hybrid industrial commercial war, which Pepe Escobar writes about, is in the form of a terror attack against the energy infrastructure in international waters, signals an absolute collapse of international law, drowned by our way or the highway rule-based order. The attack on both pipelines consisted of multiple explosion charges detonated in separate branches close to the Danish island of Bornholm, but in international waters. And this is where we get it has to be complicit with Copenhagen. None of your mind. I don't know what else we think about. These people are understanding. The reason why Copenhagen is important is that apparently these waters around this island are crammed with sensors. And they're there because of the fear Russia may invade through the same sea that's at the other end. And so Pepe goes through and explains a little more detail what's really going on in there that I appreciated to read. Again, fully consistent with what I've suggested on just a scant amount of information that we were hearing relative to the United States involvement of its militaries and others. And remember, they had there was the underwater drone situation going on, that Copenhagen was silent all that time. And if that's the case, then they contributed to an attack on one of the NATO partners. Now, I don't know what the NATO says. If you attack one of our members, you attack us all, we're going to attack you. I wonder what their internal memo said about, well, we have fights amongst ourselves. Pepe goes on to write quite a bit here, points out, again, the cui bono, who benefits. He points out quite a bit of what I talked about last week in his writing. He offers a little bit more insight than I would or have time to. And I think it's important that you understand a little bit more of the dynamic to show this is a bigger play going on. And we're looking again at politics on the one hand, and we're looking at the economy on the other. And they're not so distant each other, but they're also separate. And this is why you would hear international law, which Pepe acknowledges, and I would have to agree, does not really exist at this point. Those are just niceties anyway. They're not being nice, and Putin is a stickler for that. Is why you heard Russia coming out and saying, well, business is different than war, or business is different than aggression, or whatever, defense. It's known, international norms would say, you don't mess with a company's business. You don't attack their people through messing with their necessities. And so to the point that war is really more about politics than really an extension, a tool of it, found an interesting article that pops up from Big Surge, Politics by Other Means. And I ended up reading this whole article. First, it didn't come to me to read it. And I said, no, I want to go read that. But I'm glad I did. And pretty cool insights about going on historical perspective. Talks about a Prussian general, Karl Philipp Gottfried von Clausewitz, a participant in the Napoleonic Wars. Clausewitz, in his later years, dedicated himself to the work of that would become his iconic achievement, a dense tome titled simply Vom Krieg, meaning on war. The book is a meditation on both war strategy and the socio-political phenomenon of war, which is heavily laced with philosophical rumination. Though on war has an enduring and indelible impact on the study of military arts, the book itself is at times rather difficult thing to read, a fact that stems from the great tragedy that Clausewitz was never actually able to finish it. He died in 1831 at the age of only 51 with his manuscript in an unedited disorder and fell upon his wife to attempt to organize the published papers. Clausewitz, more than anything, is famous for his aphorism. Quote, "Everything is very simple in war, but the simplest thing is difficult." Close quote. In his vocabulary of war, which includes the terms as friction and culmination, among all his eminently quotable passages, however, one of the, perhaps the most famous is the claim that war is a mere continuation of politics by other means. And this starts off a big surge to discuss that we're looking in war, and Russia would say it was just not a war, but it doesn't matter. It's however you frame it, I guess, for yourself. But that we're looking at a political action against nations in war. It's a tool. From there, he goes on, Big Serge goes on to explain some more details, historic details, how they interrelate, which I found very insightful. And interestingly, consistent with my narrow, you know, look at things and my quick look. He expands more on what I was telling you about Russia. How do you better interpret Russia, what Russia thinks and does, their historic view, what they're protecting themselves of, and how the Putin, who actually looks like, and seems to me, he doesn't have the power of the old ruling class. He had to go a different way, but he's a supporter of the rule, the law, and the framework of the law, and that's what Big Serge here explains Putin is actually doing, and that it's a political act. And I'm going to add, he says political, I say body politic. The government is an extension of the body politic. The people, what the people will accept. And you have to deal in what the perception of the public is. And when Putin starts this whole thing, and looking at what's going on in Ukraine, he has a serious problem. He doesn't have the control and power like what may have been before in the USSR. And I told you before, watch how this chess game gets played. He has a home political problem. He has to move people from not thinking there's a problem before they see it, showing them that there is, and get them to agree there has to be something done with it. And Big Serge explains this transition. It's very cool to watch how it looks like Putin and the government at this point has made that transition till today, so they can now move to this annexation situation. Despite the storytelling of the West, despite all the machinations and saber rattling of the West, while he looks at the West destroying Europe, while he can provide the means, and is willing to, apparently. Why? Because he believes it's the economy. He can, war is not economy. Economy is not, war is politics. And so the business of doing business should be left alone. And that's usually the economic order. But as I said, there's no, Pepe Escobar actually states as well, the economic order, it's your way or it's our way or the highway, is not going to work. The economic order of international law has now fallen silent with what the United States is doing. And we can see historically now as a narrative, not an actual thing, covering other intentions. And this report, this from Big Serge, goes through almost exalting Stalin and Mao and this and that. And I don't know if I truly agree with that, but it is a people in history that took control of their nations and brought their nations to where they needed to be. And then I have to be careful not to think with my prejudice of what I was told, because I don't know if anything I was told about them was good. We can hear all the horror stories, but what was the truth becomes, I guess, a mandala effect, doesn't it? So this, I wanted to point out this. Big Serge here does. I thank him for putting this together. I think it was a fairly fair treatment, whatever my slight misgivings here and there. But he does speak to what I told you before. You better take Putin and Russia on face value. When they tell you something relative to them, when they set and they've made that existential threat to them, you better watch that is true. Even President Biden's coming out to say he knows that's going to be true, what they say. What they're leaving out is why they're responding, and they're responding to a threat that's not theirs. Now, there is some political machinations going on to restore certain things, but it seems that that seems to be what nations do. And I'm not going to excuse any of this. I'm just saying there's a different if you will, narrative about how this is actually running down. And I'm doing this because I see so many people that are blindsided because they didn't see what the truth might have been, or they were not given, there was nothing in their perception for the clues that said, don't buy into some of this stuff. You better start getting more objective in your analysis. And because I'm watching our nation, the United States of America, I'm watching all the nations go down to the very front guy of this broadcast talking about the agreeing that the Nord Stream was done by the United States, but then he's somebody who is the antithesis of the Republican form of representative government right in our university system. As I've told you, back in 2013, we identified as one of the culprit agent change agents, your university, your academia, is a subversive control system that promotes ambassadors out that actually are what you're hearing later on now as the world leaders, the global world leader. The university system in America actually produces those as ambassadors. But going back to this big surge, I truly did. I wish I could go through better to explain it. In a way, I don't want to say too much. You need to read it for what you hear from it. And I don't want to diminish the things that he may have brought out, because there were, I can't say it profound, but the fact that he's mentioning them in the context, in the way he treats this thing, is very, very good. It's very open, very accessible, and I would hope you would get a more balanced perspective of what Russia's really about. What Putin actually has to do when he's up against these psychopaths that will deny, not say, will make up stories, make narratives, will not agree that they did anything at all when their whole intention is to destroy other peoples. This story goes on to explain the Russian system now. And it's really not so straightforward. I appreciated his treatment relative to what Putin, in his system, how he now has to work without the power, actually got it to happen, if you don't think this guy can play chess, if you will. And it's but for all these narratives that cover over our view, may give us a false sense. And the problem with that is that it gives us what Putin is doing in his people to say that they need to go fight. And when? It looks like as soon as the ground freezes over there, Russia may be primed to go ahead and move against Ukraine. This has been a setup. They're taking a few losses right now, but they're not really losses. They're repositioning, it seems. And there's a winter coming. And for a while, they can't move around anyway. So there's an interesting chess game going on in the battle of what's really going on the ground for Russia and Ukraine, regardless of what the United States plan for all of it is, or the tool that Ukraine's been used for to do that. Big Surge, I think, explains to us, he puts it in a historic context. He explains the Roman influence of how this was working. He explains that before it was this issue using war as a political tool, only had relatively small armies. The max in Europe was like 20, 30,000 soldiers. Now they can field millions at this point. But how they had to do that is they had to abandon the local control, the people in small areas that could field it, an army. And they moved to a taxation principle, which was interesting for me to hear and read. In other words, tax is not just merely theft. It appears to be war, because they made centralized governments that would fund armies in order to go to war, and not necessarily just for defense. As we found out, the United States had the Defense Department. Well, it actually was the War Department before. But we got to cover and play a narrative so the people don't figure it out. So, interesting little historic discussion, and I truly appreciated what was written here in explaining what we that may want to look through the nonsense in the narrative are looking at, so that we can think a little bit more clearly on the continuing narrative that comes home to roost against us. And right now it seems they're reinvigorating, this has been the ongoing thing, where Zyolinsky is now coming back again to bring that nuclear threat, the narrative of nuclear threat, up. Now, the thing that gets me on this is if there was really a nuclear threat, there things might have been happening a little different relative to that, but they're not. And this is more, again, the narrative speaking out, where we do hear, and I'm tossed about between two. this is a dangerous situation. Let's not mince words about that. This is so dangerous. These psychopaths are what's dangerous. Normal diplomatic relations wouldn't allow what he's saying to actually happen. We're seeing that the governments are actually speaking in hesitation about it. But this Zelensky is actually stating this stuff. And then they fancy pants dance around that he actually stated it. Zelensky called on NATO to launch a preemptive strike on Russia to prevent it from using nuclear weapons. Bringing this up to say, here's the now narrative, the theme of nuclear threat. And Russia comes out, and they did this long time ago before they invaded, and Zelensky did it again. He was going to use nuclear weapons to protect himself, even though he's the one that's causing the problem for 8 years prior on the people, his own people. That Russia came out and said, don't you dare do that. We will unleash what we have. Nothing's off the table. You try that. Then Putin got blamed for saying that. Well, this Zelensky came out and says he invites NATO to launch a preemptive strike. That word strike seems to fix in my mind, notwithstanding the denial, that he wasn't talking about now in a nuclear strike. He was talking about before. Well, what he's before is he forgets to tell you that he threatened Russia with a nuclear strike. So this guy is completely unhinged if it goes real, but it could be that narrative. Why you want to pump something? Because I'm talking about something else and talking about that guy's intention, the Jeffrey Sachs issue guy in Colombia. It speeds right on through. And it comes up at the end during the same week that they start pumping this threat against a nuclear attack that Russia is saying, don't do that. Russia's already said their technology has no analog and they can reach out and touch everyone. And their new intercontinental ballistic missile is way more powerful than we thought. And, you know, I've been noticing people, how would you like New York or L.A. to disappear? Because of this nonsense that's happening. Well, obviously anybody's going to say they don't like it, but let me suggest, and it's been written, it seems, if Russia wanted to and could get their intercontinental ballistic missile through to Philadelphia, New York and Washington disappears. And so this is brinksmanship I don't think we want to tangle with, or at least whoever it is. In part of me says it's not. It's a narrative. Putin and the Russians are being very methodical about what their aims are, and they're going to accomplish them. As I told you, don't underestimate that. It's Zelensky that's promoting this stuff to try and get that response. Right after he says that they want a preemptive strike, which in my mind, all my life, I've been threatened by some nuclear thing, and then it kind of went away a little bit. And then it's starting to come back. I can't believe I'm still hearing this nonsense. The Cold War revisited. But our vocabulary is that when you say a preemptive strike, you're talking nothing but a nuclear attack. And he wants to go preemptive. He wants to act when it looks like Russia might be. When he said that, they was required now for Zelensky to do the backwalk a bit. And they did. Zelensky's staff forced to clarify the statement after President suggests preemptive strike on Russia. President Volodymyr Zelensky, in his speech on October 6th, said NATO's role was to make it impossible for Russia to use nuclear weapons. He appealed to the international community before February 24th, a couple years ago when this started, to do preemptive strikes so that they know what will happen to them if they use it, and not the vice versa, to wait for nuclear strikes by Russia. That's also agreeing he agreed to strikes. And so this is a madman in a way to even have something said. My mind says that these people in the world need to go be put in jail immediately. We shouldn't even be close to talking like this. And the United States is allowing it. In fact, they pay for this kind of press. They pay for this, if I could say, entertainment. Because I'm not so sure that there are that uncool minds in the world that would actually allow this, but we don't know. This guy is actually pushing it. And guess what? The United States seems to be pushing it as well. As much as it'll make up the narrative that it helped to interfere with Russian economy that it looks like could never have happened and didn't, and there's no evidence of it, actually, more than the stories told, and now promoted by the intelligence agency, allowed to be promoted as well. The U.S. needs, I went back and found back in a story, the U.S. needs to threaten Russia with nuclear strikes in the Ukraine. A senior aide and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky is urging the United States to flesh out a specific retaliatory measure where to invoke nuclear strikes against Ukraine. The condition is that this has been an ongoing theme from the United States side as well. It's not new. And they go on and on and on to try to show that Putin, again, is some madman on their side and completely contrary to the world. And you realize that the world is, they're teaming up, you know, there's gangs on both sides now. As I told you that would happen, but that's for driving this other thing that's not talked about. Once we're talking about getting everybody into nuclear threat, we can, I guess, forget that there's something else running along the line. Pentagon admits likelihood of Ukrainian shelling near nuclear plant. So the Pentagon admits in this nuclear scenario that the Ukraine army was shelling that nuclear plant. I want to remind us of that. The United States understood that was going on. The United States is actually paying Zelensky to do whatever he's going to do with his cocaine and armaments payments, shipments to other places, other terrorist groups. A senior U.S. official, military official admitted that Monday that the Ukrainian forces may have struck the area around the Zaporozhye nuclear power plant, but insisted that these was only in response to Russian fire allegedly coming from the area. They know that Ukraine was using artillery to attack a nuclear plant. That they all continue to allow it without denouncing it says that they didn't get this emergency, but they were okay with the threat of it. Then the United States says urges shutdown of Europe's largest nuclear plant. I've reported about this. The United States doesn't want Europe to have energy. Russia was in control of that. They're allowing Ukraine to shell it. At the same time that the United States is complaining, the American stockpiles of those artillery pieces or shells are uncomfortably low after giving Ukraine aid, admitting they're putting the United States, if there's another war coming, into a diminished capacity. The Pentagon is conducting a review to determine how to meet its own supply needs while still arming Ukraine. I don't even know if that's true or not, but this is what they're trying to tell people. They're allowing, they are not bashful to allow a nuclear threat, a radiation threat. And this keeps going on, this theme keeps going on and on and on as we hear now. We take credit for something we're too demented and having dementia to discuss. Biden now, here this week, pushing this nuclear threat thing, raising the level of awareness to push buttons in people, invokes the ghost of Kennedy by saying the nuclear Armageddon risk highest since 62 crisis. President Joe Biden is declaring the risk of nuclear Armageddon is at the highest level since 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis as Russia officials speak of using tactical nuclear weapons after suffering massive setbacks in the 8-month invasion of Ukraine. Now, I understand that they are taking some hits, but it's actually a strategic pullback, getting ready for what they're doing, it seems. You'll read that in Big Surge's discussion and paper. You'll read when that should happen, and it makes sense to me that they're doing it that way. They're blaming Russia's, but not telling you that the United States and Zelensky are making the original threats that Russia is responding to. Biden raises this level to Kennedy's Cuban Missile Crisis, as if to say, I'm in Kennedy's position, which is, again, propagandistically, this is really good, but I don't know how he can carry this. Speaking at a Democratic fundraiser, Biden said Thursday night, the Russian President Vladimir Putin is a guy I know fairly well, and the Russian leader is not joking when he talks about the use of tactical nuclear weapons or biological or chemical weapons. Biden added, we have not faced the prospect of Armageddon since Kennedy and the Cuban Missile Crisis. He suggested that the threat from the Putin is real because his military is, and you might say, significantly underperforming. Biden invokes the ghost of Kennedy to bring him up to the level to do what? Get y'all to feel like he's Kennedy and he's doing it to defend you and the nation. When in fact, he forgets to tell y'all he's him, because he hasn't said no, and the Pentagon and the CIA and everybody else involved are pushing for a nuclear, at least the cover of a nuclear interaction. The ghost of Kennedy could not support what Biden's doing today. And yet it's being played right today. This is the narrative played to the home to do what? Do what Putin did back to his people to get them to support him in defending Russia. They're trying to invoke in the people of America that Biden is somehow Kennedy. And I can't imagine the insult of that, even though we've learned Kennedy may not have been any different, although he was taken out by the same players, the same Zionistic players that are kind of sitting in the background working their ways. And Biden admits you shouldn't take Putin. You shouldn't diminish Putin's statement. No, he's a guy of his word. And I've told you that. The Russians are fairly central in how they do things. What's my expertise? Well, I studied Russian for a few years. I didn't get real good at it. I studied the culture. It's fascinating culture, fascinating people. Do I agree with their politics? Well, no, not really. But after looking at what's going on in this country, I can't say that we're better. I can't say that we are the beacon anymore. You hear me talk about all the reasons why. Part of that is us, the people, not stopping it. They act in our name. But to raise this thing up to invoke the Armageddon of a nuclear catastrophe in Biden while he's causing it, unlike what I haven't heard that Kennedy actually caused that. And it was very close there. Is the hallmark here of more narrative entertainment that they want to get you to buy in. And I'm going to start to move over now at the same time they hype this nuclear threat. As long as there's psychopaths with a button anywhere, I guess we have to see this. But we hype this threat. In comes something else that I found fascinating. It's continuing in a different, it'll be, I think I can show, at least propose, it's continuing the ongoing thing that showed us that we're a nation that's not living under law. And no one said no over the last few years. Biden administration purchases $290 million worth of nuclear radiation emergency drugs. So they hype this nuclear threat, and they continue to push it and push it, and now they raise it up to the they bring the ghost of Kennedy involved. And then they go ahead and their administration purchases $290 million worth of nuclear radiation emergency drugs. The Biden administration, Department of Health and Human Services, has spent $290 million securing supplies of a drug for use of radiological nuclear emergencies, according to an October 4th release. The release is not so subtle in admitting that the compound is meant as a prophylactic against a problem that would most likely only arise from either a nuclear strike or a nuclear meltdown. Now, I'm going to interject right here. This is now the article focusing our attention on this nuclear narrative. And they say, most likely only arise, caught my eye. Most likely. Well, maybe there's something else. And I'm going to go now through a proposal. The release is not so subtle as to do this prophylactically for this pressing this nuclear threat. It states that the ARS is also known as a radiation sickness and explained that the syndrome is when a person's entire body is exposed to a high dose of penetrating radiation reaching internal organs in a matter of seconds. The specific symptom of ARS mentioned in the article is, quote, impaired blood clotting as a result of low platelet counts, which can lead to uncontrolled and life-threatening bleeding. And I saw that, folks. I read that. This turned into a whole other study. And it always amazes me when these little triggers come up for me, when little insights that I can then go to the end, find the end thing that this thing tells us is going on. What's really going on? Underneath the color of the narrative of a nuclear threat, we need to have this drug. and it helps stop bleeding. Have we heard that recently, folks? I'm going to give you a little bit of the hints as we go. N-plate is the drug. Purpose, N-plate's purpose is to stimulate platelet production in both adults and children, and is also prescribed to those suffering from immune thrombocytopenia. The HHS stated that the deal was part of the government's long-standing ongoing efforts to be better prepared to save lives following radiological and nuclear emergencies. The release also states that N-plate has been specifically developed with support from NIH, NIAID, and the HHS's Biomedical Advanced Research and Development Authority, or BARDA, what they call BARDA. Media outlets such as the UK's The Telegraph framed the purchase as if it came in response to the nuclear rhetoric of the Russian Federation President Vladimir Putin. And don't underestimate what they're doing here, as you should be able to hear exactly what they're doing there. In October the 3rd, address to the Russian people on the topic of referendum-triggered annexation of the portions of Ukraine, Putin reached the topic of nuclear war when he stated the United States is only one country, only a country in the world that has used nuclear weapons twice, destroying cities of Hiroshima and Nagasaki in Japan. And they created a precedent, said Putin. Putin recalled that during World War II, the United States and Britain reduced Dresden, Hamburg, Cologne, and many other German cities to rubble without the least military necessity. It was done ostensibly and to repeat without any military necessity. So they bring Putin in, they bring in Ukraine, even though the HHS said, in fact, this is part of our ongoing work of preparedness and radiological security. It has not been accelerated by the situation in Ukraine. And I want you to take that to the bank. It's not being accelerated by Ukraine. In other words, there is no actual nuclear imperative we're preparing for. The Biden administration's left hand must not know what the right hand is doing, or they're telling us the truth and has nothing to do with nuclear threat. The Armageddon that Kennedy's ghost invokes. In a breakdown of N-plate for sufferers of immune thrombocytopenia, the ChemoCare website explains that the drug is administered by subcutaneous between the skin and muscle injection and brings with it one common side effect as serious as coughing up blood. Less common side effects include upper respiratory infection and joint and muscle and abdominal pain. It kind of sounded like we're hearing something like the stuffy head medicine stuff here. It does like everything else when your body gets involved. We get down to the point. What is this stuff and what does it cost? $290 million had me thinking, how many doses? When this becomes an interesting problem, we're going to find out they never said. But we can find out in this article. Let's work it out. $290 million, if this drug was $1 a dose and we only needed one dose, would cover 290 million Americans. In other words, if it's only $1 a dose, and we're going to find out it's far higher than that, they're only buying enough to, they're actually saying, let's see, 290 million, there's about 320 to 30 million Americans. Some of y'all are going to die. But it gets worse than that, because this is not $1 a dose. This stuff costs, Romniplotim, rings up at $1,062.50 for a single-use 250 microgram vial. It was surmised in this article, which I found interesting as well, that they telegraph these informations, that most people who respond to Romniplotim will require a dose of 250 micrograms, making the extrapolated drug costs for weekly dosing for 1 year approximately $55,000. Kind of divides that $290 million up. Everyone's not going to get this stuff. Very few actually may do that. And where might that be? And wait a minute, they said it's not actually escalating because of a nuclear threat. Well, this other thing about this costly dosing for 1 year is improper, because when you will get to the point of where it talks about it, it depends on what you have it for. It can, one dose may be enough. You might need more. It depends on who you are and what you need. It doesn't go to a year. In fact, you're supposed to cut it off shorter. So that little kick out $55,000 is just a piece of nonsense discussion. It's not actually considerate of what they're going to use this for. But it puts the idea on that we're going to be needing radiation treatments for a long time. ARS, as I move now to an article, ARS, also known as radiation sickness, occurs when a person's entire body is exposed to a high dose of penetrating radiation, reaching internal organs in a matter of seconds. To reduce radiation-induced bleeding, Nplate stimulates the body's production of platelets. The drug can be used to treat adults and children. The United States government said the procurement of Nplate was not in response to the war in Ukraine. An HHS spokesman told the Telegraph this is part of an ongoing work for preparedness and radiological security. So they keep focusing on this, even though Ukraine's not part of it. I want to keep focusing on this is a narrative, and they want to have you keep thinking that it's about radiation. What I want to do is I want to move things over to symptoms or the things it's used for. That's what my mind starts to focus on as I was reading these stories. What's the off-label use of this stuff? Where else might it work? What else has been causing bleeding? What is that tied to? I'm still back to, well, how many doses did they buy? I mean, how many people are they going to think that, if this is nuclear radiation problems, aren't they going to help everybody? Well, they're not going to tell you. And HHS spends $290 million on extra radiation sickness medicine, and it could be troubling signs of the times. Fierce Pharma says, noting that the money is buying an undisclosed amount of Amgen drug Nplate, approved to treat blood cell injuries and acute radiation sickness. They're not telling us how many things. Well, if we start doing math, you're going to find out it depends on really how many doses and everything. But we go from 290 million of you going to be saved and the rest of your fodder if there's a nuclear war. And remember, if Sarmat gets dropped on Philadelphia, New York disappears in Washington, you won't need this drug. So let's understand that. And the rural, so-called country folk aren't going to likely need it because they're not going to necessarily be a target. So, but we get the numbers down, and the best numbers are going to be like 31,000 people. And what's kind of hidden inside here is part of this appropriation was an interesting supply warehousing that the manufacturer keeps to keep from having expired product. And they say that that's going to be fixed by the demand that's going to be put on this Nplate in the commercial field as the expiration date come and they start giving it out so that it gets used. My thought there, and I'm hoping your thought too, is where in the United States do we have so much radiation sickness that that much material, that much product would be given out? Can't be the reason it's given out. And I'm still back onto this ulterior motive for this. What's this thing and this cause of bleeding and what else? What's the off-label uses of these things? They're not telling us the dosages, but the dosages are down, way down from 290 million. When you're looking at each dose would be 1,000 if you use it once. And if you listen to the experts, it says it's going for a year, which you look, well, I'll show you, you get some website links to show it doesn't, can't go for a year. Would be 55,000. Carves that $290 million pretty good, so that hardly anybody's getting it. That it's not going to be an expiration problem either. No, they're going to be giving it out. Where is this radiation sickness now that this all works? So what is the cost? Well, when you start looking at what they're talking about over a larger purchase, these things, these vials are like almost $10,000 a piece. Notwithstanding, they're only 1,000 for a little vial of 125 micrograms. And so there's a big money thing going on here on top of it all. And then we say, well, how long does it work? I have another link. It says, it talks about how this is supposed to work, how much you're supposed to get. And a single dose of N-platelet counts, of the N-platelet counts were found to increase over a 2 to 3 week period according to the results of clinical studies. In clinical studies, adults patients who responded to the treatment of N-plate and achieved and maintained a desired platelet count did so on a median dose of 2 to 3 micrograms per kilogram of N-plate a week. N-plate should be discontinued after 4 weeks of treatment. So that blows away those experts saying a year at the maximum dose of 10 micrograms per kilogram. a weak if of platelet counts have not increased at sufficient levels. And platelet is also used as a one-off treatment to increase survival in patients with hematopoietic syndrome of acute radiation syndrome. And so they keep bringing up this radiation, and I'm still thinking, wait a minute, they talked about other things here, for what it does, and that it also can stop essentially bleeding. Let's look at some of that bleeding. Another link, while you're taking Nplate, you may need rescue treatments for your ITP. This Nplate does not fix the underlying problem for the bleeding that's caused by the radiation. This is sometimes the case if your platelet counts need to be quickly increased. The situation could happen if you have severe bleeding that needs to be controlled or if you need to have surgery. And they go through and explain this. You get the link. You go right through this. Start watching for what it does. It goes after and helps the bone marrow adjust and the platelet counts get increased. It's not for monitoring. It's just to increase. It's not supposed to be maintained. And that's an interesting little exception to all this. The government says you can't use it for that. The end plate is increased the number of platelets your body makes until your platelet count reaches the 5,000 mcls per liter. I suppose at this level, your risk of bleeding is reduced. But if end plate increases your platelet count too much, it can raise your risk of getting blood clots. So because of this, the drug isn't used to increase platelets to a level that's considered, isn't used to increase your platelet to a level that's considered normal. Everybody's different. But look at how they do that. It makes more platelets, supposed to stop bleeding, but then it causes clots. Now, that's not a direct correlation to what I think your mind just did, but it does anticipate another thing. And then they go out and they explain more and more how this works out, that you're looking at each side of a problem. Remember I talked about these counteractions that go on, the counterindications. We talked about we're talking about moving into what your response is to the sticker juice, right? Bleeding. Remember women were bleeding? Remember they were also having blood clots. Remember I pointed out that was just by definition of the responses a venom. Remember I responded to the Brazil girl that had both blood clotting and bleeding. What is this nuclear threat bringing under that they do this at this time? And they're only going to have enough that if you look in the world, the number of doses that are available don't reach a nuclear catastrophe when that happens, but it could be pertinent to an ongoing response of people that are bleeding more. And they have that problem. And that's why they're talking about it here. They talk about serious side effects as blood clotting. It has side effects that it looks just like the flu, just like every immune system problem. And remember, they said, does Nplate cure ITP? And I want to go back to this word. No, Nplate does not cure immune thrombocytopenia. Well, immune got me then down the road even further because that's what I'm looking for. What the sticker juice did was an attack on our autoimmune system, which caused a bleeding in some people. And I wanted to know what other use of this can be found relative to that. Autoimmune things. And I've got a little article. Acute radiation syndrome caused by exposure to high dose of radiation can cause a range of symptoms. So symptoms just like the flu. Just like you've been told. Severe cases can be weak, devastating effects on the body, including destruction of the bone marrow and internal bleeding, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Nplate, this drug, which can be used for both adults and children, folks, is aimed at reducing the uncontrolled bleeding often caused by radiation. Not exclusively caused. And here's where I'm going, because then I found this article that exactly stated what I was hunting down, based on that word immune in that other thing. The Food and Drug Administration first approved the drug in 2008 to combat an autoimmune disorder that caused serious bleeding and extended another approval in January last year for use of the drug as a radiation sickness treatment. The new purchase follows growing international concern over the potential use of nuclear weapons in Russia's war on Ukraine. And they have expressly said it wasn't because of that. What they did do is approve it for autoimmune disorders that cause bleeding. What recently, folks, have we seen in the news for the last 2 years that causes autoimmune disorders and bleeding, which they might see fit to need a remedy quickly approved to affect that blockage, to stop that problem of bleeding? Do I say more, or do I have Sound Minds get cut off of his YouTube account? Because that's what they're doing over there, folks. I don't know. I don't even know if YouTube is going to, if Sound Minds is going to be up this week. But they're threatening that account because he broadcasts my stuff. We're just talking from the news, the notice to you of what's going on. Is the Ukraine war not applicable to this? The nuclear threat, the Armageddon of Kennedy's ghost? Actually, why they brought in these radiation sickness medicines? Or might there be a cover? And might that cover be run economics? And because, again, Lagarde at IMF said the sticker juice is the economy. Endless disease is the economy. To force sustainable development. Am I too far off? Can I just offer this as a proposal for your consideration then, please? Can you go back through and listen to the evidence? Yes, the pipelines got done. It's an economic attack. It's war. That's politics. It's protecting the body politic, you all, by attacking another body politic, them all. Us versus them. U.S. versus them all. And then there's a middle ground, those in Europe, that are going to be the current fodder for a new transformation of an economic and political system. If it looks like the people of Europe are standing up to say, let's get the EU out of here. If they don't look far enough away, they're just going from the frying pan to the fire. The United States of America could care less about its people. It has to have some treatments. And then it looks like the hero when it does. You're going to be bleeding too much like women were and then other people? Then they can give you this and it's already approved. Is it going to be something that they can keep up with a demand of expiration dates? Sure. Absolutely. They're telling you how much harm is out there. That this one consequence, bleeding, does. Might it hurt you if you have a blood clot? You're the other side, you have blood clotting? Absolutely. You're also going to find out it actually messes with the heart a bit. So, boy, they're sure messing with you totally as they keep you just on the edge of viability as long as you have something to take. While they also hide information, as we see FDA withholding autopsy results on people who died after getting sticker juice, U.S. Food and Drug Administration is refusing to release autopsies conducted on people who died after getting sticker juice. They're just like they're obstructing the withholding knowledge of how many doses they're buying. And that they're coming under the cover, or lying by omission, that the public references Ukraine, and they're telling you it's not about Ukraine or nuclear war. They claim it's going to be for preparedness, but to what, if there's really nothing more? If just Kennedy's ghost is rattling his story, that Biden is using, giving more credibility, that everyone buys into, like they bought into Reagan and CIA using a computer digital software to interfere with analog valves that required someone to hand open and close, that was controlled nonetheless by automatic analog safety equipment, which no digital control could affect. The FDA says it barred the release of medical files, but a drug safety advocate says that it could release the autopsies with personal information redacted, notwithstanding that you're dead, you aren't a person any longer. I found that interesting. It was a bit of a laugh to me. You're not a person with rights. You're not someone with rights at that point. You're actually, if you're not careful, maybe property if you got the sticker juice. And to be reanimated, remember? But the FDA, actually, I don't see how they have authority to ban anything, so I'm not sure about this story. However, it says the refusal was issued to the Epoch Times, which submitted a Freedom of Information Act for all autopsy reports obtained by the FDA concerning any deaths reported by the vaccine adverse events reporting system following the sticker juice implementation. Now, for y'all to do FOIAs, the Freedom of Information Act, not open records requests, which is state, but the federal FOIA, that has a due process. If they're denied, you get to go and attack or challenge the propriety of that denial. And that they should here by saying exactly what they said. And I would also say, but there's nobody there you're protecting. Now, the other thing is about some of these reports are coming from the VAERS, I think. And so there's some propriety to the one who put the report there. Again, those names could be redacted. And you can challenge, and you'd have to understand it. There's a follow-up that you may have to, in one of your requests that are denied, then there's a set of rules for all that. So they're claiming that they have the right to withhold an autopsy report so you can't see what's going on. It's just not, who cares? I mean, why wouldn't they want you to know? But they don't. Again, it's about an omission to provide information to do what? To promote a narrative or hide one? As we move on through this health matters and the government involving itself to allow these things upon us, researchers used GMO mosquitoes to vaccinate humans in NIH-funded malaria study. Not even a new study, not even a new story, but this is what we're doing. When you said no, they're looking for other ways to get at you. And the National Institute of Health funded a malarial vaccine trial study that used genetic-modified mosquitoes to vaccinate humans. Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has close ties to the research. And they go on and talk about this. They're going on and they're trying to get around any of your lack of consent and around the fact that this is supposed to be used as a treatment and prevention. I don't even know how they're allowing this because there's nothing to attack they know it prevents. So those of you that do some of these things and want to make records and challenges, you could inquire about that, and then you can move around to move, I don't know where, again, I don't know how to say to you, it's so general, when you find where you need to go, you'd focus in on that, and that would be your challenge relative to how you're going to impose the law, because when you start off with some professor that actually speaking outside of his realm, which is an economist speaking about war, and he's actually the head of an economic attack and a political attack through called sustainable development, you better have a whole lot more on your game than just having complaints. That these folks are dealing in your health and dealing in your life and dealing in your ability to function, your body, function properly. That want to know what's going on to be able to eventually control you. Regardless of what you think and say. As we see here, to induce you to agree, the warm and fuzzy, it all comes under the same thing the first economist, Jeffrey Sachs, is talking about the U.S. done the pipelines, but he's the sustainable development guru for Colombia. The USDA now asking people to register their vegetable gardens for national database. Registration is confiscation. Let me offer to you something, those that you need to read, how you read this sustainable development nonsense. You register your garden with the USA, and one must meet several obtainable standards. In this story is the key to the whole thing. Because what they're talking about being subject to the obtainable standards is the USDA is moving to foster a more diverse and resilient local food system to empower communities to address issues like nutrition, access, and climate change. If you don't hear sustainable development in that statement, you're not reading enough and you don't know how you're being attacked. These obtainable standards come by way of the 2030 agenda, which require what? That you will have shared responsibility because it's called prosperity. Your wealth is shared. Your responsibilities are shared. Your obligations are shared. There's nothing individual. They conglomerate you in a registration that you must meet these obtainable standards. and the nation change the standards. As they speak to you in the warm and fuzzies, we welcome gardens nationwide to join us in the People's Garden effort and all it represents. And all it represents is a phrase from Hades, folks. What in the Hades is that? All it represents. Do you even have a clue? Said Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack, the criminal. And I've explained this guy for years and decades, back to 2010 when he was in before. Quote, local gardens across the country share USDA goals of the building more diversified and resilient local food systems, empowering communities to come together around expanding access to healthy food, addressing climate change, and advancing equity. Like, growing food ain't healthy enough, he's got to say it's healthy food, and then you got to attach climate change and advancing equity. Do you know what that is, folks? Do you know the servitude you're putting in? Do you know the sharing of the community that comes in like Genghis Khan to say, I want a cup of tea, thank you? Standing in front of his horde. Stakeholder capitalism, disaster capitalism. Secretary Vilsack added, we encourage existing gardens and new gardens to join the movement. Maybe like a bowel movement, sounds like to me. Growing local food benefits local communities in so many ways, and we offer technical resources to help. Also, it's a great way to connect with your local USDA team. Folks, it used to be your local university had an agricultural extension department. It wasn't federal. This is federalized. His invitation is like Dracula. Don't let him in the door. You don't have to have a resilient system that attaches itself to climate change, a fraud, advancing equity, sustainable development based on a foreign objective and standard, contrary to your local property rights, contrary to your rights to do anything, because they've asked you to do something and you did, instead of saying, I don't need your help that way. In fact, where did that local extension office that wasn't tied to permaculture go in my university? As we also see the government coming against, again, food is medicine, I find, so that's why it was part of that thing. We now hear major medical orgs demand that the DOJ prosecute people who share misleading information online. The American Medical Association, AMA, sent Attorney General Merrick Garland a letter Monday calling on him to investigate the organization, individuals, and entities coordinating, provoking, and carrying out bomb threats and threats of personal violence against children, hospital, and physicians across the United States. Okay, that's pretty cool. AMA is calling out something that shouldn't be happening. Why are you doing that anyway? Maybe it's not you, but it's somebody, and they're using it as a way to get at this. Why don't you send Merrick Garland a letter saying, investigate the organization's individual entities coordinating, provoking, and carrying out a fraudulent medical emergency they had no jurisdiction anywhere to actually implement, that committed waste, fraud, and abuse on the federal government and the state governments by bribe. Why don't we send those letters out? If this AMA can do that to attack what shouldn't be happening, and rightfully so, why don't you do the one that also shouldn't have been done but attacked you? The attacks are rooted in intentional campaign of disinformation. Is it disinformation that no jurisdiction in the United States of America or anywhere else with the rule of law and democracy that they did not demonstrate a non-fraudulent agency for their pretend presumptive medical emergency is not being asked by anybody, and I've been trying to get people to ask that for all the whole time. As we see all these helps from the government, all these narratives, all these things that they're doing over time, contrary to the missions of these agencies, that we see U.S. life expectancy plummeting, unintentional injuries, a category that includes overdoses and other drug-related misadventures, as well as heart disease, were also major factors contributing to the decline. Before the pandemic, heart disease had long been the top recorded cause of death in the United States, while the opioid epidemic has led to record numbers of overdoses for several years running. Breaking the CDC numbers down by race yields even more alarming trends. Native Americans suffered a 6.6-year drop in life expectancy between 2019 and 2021, compared to about 4 years for blacks and Hispanic people and 2.4 years for the white people. The statistical burden disproportionately fell on males, Listen to the news we've been talking about all this year during this nonsense, this Kobe fraud. Who has been being hurt? Now they're admitting some of this stuff. The statistical burden disproportionately fell on males whose life expectancy has declined to just 73.2 years, while females can still expect to live comparatively long, 79.1 years. The report found most of the decline in life expectancy took place during the first year of the pandemic, so called, for non-white populations, while white Americans suffered the worst losses during the second. Let me offer to you something. That's an economic hit. The most economically hurt were the first to fall, probably from the lockdowns and everything else. Has nothing to do with this fabrication. The COVID-19 pandemic is a presumptive nonsense. It's a narrative, like the nuclear narrative, to get them to be able to bring in the things that they're not going to try and mitigate the problems they caused through bleeding in people. That's just one. There's plenty more. So understand what they're admitting here about the non-white population suffering the first hits. And then, later, when the implementation of the sticker juice hit, then we started to see the white population get taken down, as they were the most resilient, if you will, the most able to weather the few years, augmented by a couple payments here and there. Moving on to story here. Similar studies have found that COVID worsened an already yawning gap between the U.S. and what was the most expensive healthcare in the world, the other developed nations in terms of life expectancies. Americans can now expect to live 5 fewer years than European counterparts. And I'm not going to be able to get to it, but you're going to, all living in poverty, the United States people and the Europeans living in poverty, and you're living less. And the implementation of all this administrative stuff under narratives of other things, while you may be missing the importance of who's talking in the news and the real agenda that's advancing it through what we were told was an economic hit, through the color of a political action in war called sustainable development against all people on the globe, is the thing that you will have to look locally to protect yourself from. You don't need to register your gardens with the federal government. What you do need is quality information, which is likely not available anymore, to make sure how to grow that garden. I hope all y'all had good gardens this year. I had mixed results, pretty good in some regards. But we're in some trouble here with not understanding who the threats are from, the cover that's put on, and then they're misdirecting us, and that we stand by is a real problem. The UK people are going to be in poverty. UK, the Truss woman, she's talking nonsense, but she's a sustainable anti-people politician, if you look at her that way, an SAP, a SAP. But she's actually a WEF, a World Economic Forum SAP. These people are stupid and psychopathic, but they're in control. They got their way into us. And they're using this underlying thing while they cover, UK and the United States cover, it was a nuclear threat that they agree is not doing anything. And if we miss this bouncing ball and the lack of the pea in the cup, and we think there's a game going on to be entertained by, we're definitely going to be hurt. People are going to be hurt severely, and in the future, there is no rights. You will have no property, no rights, and you will enjoy it. Hope I said something here to invigorate your thoughts. Get you motivated to protect, learn more to protect yourself. Look at where the real causes are. Don't disregard some of the other nonsense that we're told so that we don't get cajoled into being destroyed and destroy ourselves. We buy in. I'll be with you next week. Tech Tips with Nature Report.
Another lesson. I hope with today's information you can take it to those that misbehave. From behind the woodshed, leaving his mark on the beast, this is Hal Anthony. Till next time, journey with purpose.
up a can of whoop-ass feels like.
Son, you just opened a whole case of whoop-ass.